You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Before we begin, we should acknowledge that the land we meet on today is the traditional land of the Kaurna people. We respect their spiritual relationship with their country. We also acknowledge the Kaurna people as the traditional custodians of the Adelaide region, and that their cultural and heritage beliefs are still as important to the living Kaurna people. Humanity is like an enormous web, so that if you touch it anywhere, you set the whole thing trembling. As we move around this world and as we act with kindness, perhaps, or with indifference, or with hostility toward the people we meet, we too are setting the great web a tremble. The life that I touch, for good or ill, will touch another life, and that in turn another, until who knows where the trembling stops, or in what far place and time my touch will be felt. Our lives are linked together. No one is an island. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship. It's called a service because its intention is to serve you. And it's worship because it serves you by raising to worth things that matter.
My name is Rob McPherson, the minister of this church, and I welcome you here on behalf of generations of Unitarians who've worshipped in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. We are a spiritual community that encourages and supports all who come to find, to fashion, and most importantly, to follow their own spiritual path. Any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. You're invited to kick on with us after the service for coffee, tea, and conversation. Let's join together in singing our opening hymn, Love Will Guide Us. Please stand as you're able.
How wonderful to see so many of you today. Hi, I'm Sandy. And this month in June, all of us oldies as well, we're talking about judgment. And if you don't know what judgment means, it means, you know, if you think mean thoughts about somebody, or we can have mean thoughts about ourselves, be really tough on ourselves. We can say, I want to be taller, or I wish I was this, or I wish I was that. And you know what? You are all perfect, just the way you are. Now, our story today is about Alfie, and he's a pretty shy sort of a guy. You guys, you're just all perfect, just the way you are.
It's our tradition to share recent events on our spiritual journeys in this open forum of fellowship. And this is an act of trust that helps us bind our fellowship more closely together and makes this space truly sacred. If you've had a recent event that's been significant on your spiritual journey, like these, you can share it by coming up, lighting a votive candle from our chalice, and telling us, as briefly as possible, about it. Now, some things may lie too deep for words, but you're also, therefore, welcome to light a candle in perfect silence. Whether you choose to share or not, you can take part in expanding our circle of compassion by listening with an open heart and mind and refraining from comment. I now open our worship space for this sacred act that draws us together in our shared humanity. Thank you. Great music enlarges the scope of our sensibilities, and great music beautifully played in particular. Margaret wanted me to let you know that all the music today is by Chopin. Last week, we began our annual month of observance by encouraging a common daily spiritual practice, noticing the unconscious ways, or conscious ways, we judge others. We explored why we have an innate reflex for it, why it's not always good for us, how it can reveal more about us than we care to admit, and what an alternative approach might be. We also had a quick gloss of the religious and philosophical wisdom around refraining from the hasty judgment of people. We had bits of Socrates, Buddha, Jesus, Carl Jung, and the Talmud. If you weren't here, no worries. You can catch the entire rationale for this month-long project in Lived Religion by listening to the podcast of the last service on our Expanding Horizons podcast site, or indeed, you can watch the TV broadcast when it comes out on Channel 44. I'll let you know when that's going to go to air. That'll go to air in the next few weeks. There are some things that you won't hear about on the podcast or see on the broadcast, because to begin ourselves a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, we had some congregational buzz time that wasn't recorded for obvious reasons. We considered and discussed some questions that broke the ice on this topic and got us opening up to each other from two perspectives. How we feel about being hastily judged, the sense of injustice it provoked, and how we find ourselves and who we find ourselves apt to judge hastily in our day-to-day lives. I shared with you a couple of superficial things I resented being judged about, and a judgment that I make from time to time that doesn't reflect well on me. We also recalled the rationale and the mechanics for periods of spiritual observance. During similar such periods as, say, Lent or Ramadan, people in those traditions are brought into daily awareness of their faith values by the keenly felt absence of something. Muslims, as you know, fast between sunup and sundown, and so are reminded of their faithfulness to Allah and to their tradition with every single hunger pang they feel. Lent, for Christians, can be a little less demanding. Christians usually give up something they enjoy, offering it up to partake of Christ's sacrificial suffering for their sins. And again, it's a daily absence of whatever it is, junk food, booze, television, Facebook. And this daily absence of something renews their faithfulness to the God of their understanding. The degree of discomfort is kind of up to the individual Christian. But these periods of communal observance do more. It's a kind of boot camp that strengthens solidarity amongst the faithful. They all know that each other are going through something uncomfortable, since they're going through it together at the same time. And so their fixed periods of shared discomfort are thus made easier and more bearable by this solidarity. So they focus their attention to their faith in their daily lives, between visits to the cathedral or the mosque or the chapel. The very brevity of these intense periods of harder spiritual work ramp up their spiritual awareness quickly. By repeatedly attending to different daily habits, different thoughts are bred, and people become more spiritually engaged and have a greater shot at real spiritual growth. Our Unitarian months of observance are a little different. Our months of observance are less about the absence of something than about presence of mind. Now, I've avoided using the much abused and overused term mindfulness, but that's it. Making yourself entertain new habits of thought and action is less like a pang and more like a nag. The wristbands we give you are your daily nag, like a text message from me, your caring parent, saying, "Have you eaten your vegetables today?" And of course, in our tradition, you're free not to, without the threat of censure, exclusion, or excommunication. But whether you ignore this month of practice altogether or fake it to humor me, it's no skin off anyone's nose, whether you do that. We hope that you see the positive benefits of the spiritual practices at the heart of such observances as this year's Judge Not. That's a handy hashtag you can use to share on our social media sites. That's Facebook, that's our Twitter site, and that's a handy hashtag because this hashtag, trying to entertain more compassionate narratives about others, didn't really fit on the wristbands. And they would be on the new wristbands that I promised you this week if our wristband company wasn't run by a bunch of slackers. So, scaling the Iger, whatever it is you're doing this week. So, next week, hopefully, and the week after, we'll have new yellow wristbands. So it's like judo. You go up a level from white to yellow the more you stick with the practice. So look for that then. It's good news in this for you rationalists out there. All spiritual practices are grounded in two very real ways our mind actually works that confirm our free will and our capacity for self-determination. Now, you need to brace yourself because these two ways the human mind works involve big words. You ready? Here's one. Metacognition. That's a very big word. It's a very simple meaning. It means thinking about our thinking. We humans have the capacity, unique in nature as far as we know, to stand, as it were, above and outside our own thoughts and look down objectively to analyze and evaluate and maybe change them. Metacognition is the basis for virtually all therapeutic practices and for much of education, too. We don't always use this capacity. We don't always think about our thinking as much as we'd like to think we think about our thinking. But we all have the capacity for observing and adjusting our thought processes. Thank you, Bev. We all have that capacity. And you'll be glad to know that studies show that active interventions that urge you to think about your thinking, like these months of observance, like good teachers everywhere, make a huge difference between those who are able to shift their thinking and those who don't. In other words, people are naturally inclined to be a little lazy when it comes to self-improvement, even the self-improvement called spiritual growth. But there is no growth without some discomfort. So we need others to prompt us to a larger view and support us in fellowship. Now look, for the most part in the Unitarian tradition, you're pretty much on your own in terms of finding, fashioning, and following a spiritual path, which is, of course, groovy and freeing and all that. But it can very easily breed spiritual complacency. Not so much thinking about your thinking as rearranging your prejudices. But this is the one time of year when one useful spiritual practice is communal and shared with us all. Now, metacognition would be no good without the other big word. Again, brace yourself. Neuroplasticity. Thinking about your thinking has to lead to new habits of thinking, or it won't take as a new reflex. The emerging knowledge field of neuroplasticity reveals that repeated new actions can become ingrained neural pathways, habits of mind, in as little as 21 days of continuous practice, hence months of observance. But you need to keep at it. Notice your thinking, rinse it, and repeat, like shampoo, in order to forge these new neural connections. Well, look, last week I did promise that there'd be less of me preaching and more of you sharing over the next two services, but before we get into that, let's lift our hearts toward the sacredness of our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of all people, including those we tend to judge, by lifting our voices in this second hymn, When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place. Please stand as you're able. When we tell our story from deep inside and we listen with a loving mind and we hear our voices in each other's words, then our heart is in a holy place. So let's make this place holier now rather than holier than thou by first sharing amongst yourselves some buzz time. Maybe, let's say, today, maybe we just did a sort of random buzz last week, but I think this week, try to hit groups of three so we defeat the I only talk to my partner or friends dynamic. If you were here last week and have attended to the spiritual practice and of noticing and refraining from judging others this week, please talk to your cohort about these questions. What did you notice about your judgments? What successes, struggles, or insights have you had? And if you are new this week to this practice, please talk to your cohort about these questions. What would you resent being hastily judged on yourself? And who are you apt to hastily judge? We'll have a few minutes to buzz amongst ourselves, and then I'm going to ask you to share some responses on the microphone. So take a few moments now. Okay, well, the buzz time's just to sort of break the ice and get you thinking and get you talking to people rather than watching the service like live television. So, now, anyone care to share a story about your practice from the preceding week so far, or a response to the questions that are there for newbies this week? As usual, I wouldn't ask you to do anything that I wouldn't do. So, you can probably tell I've already formed some judgments about the people that supply our wristbands. When I was told that they weren't going to show up again this week, I had instantly leap into my mind a picture of a couple of, I don't know, 20-something guys in somebody's mother's basement doing bong hits and laughing about how they've taken our money and we're going to get the wristbands when we get them, and, you know, they bought a slab or two. And, of course, because I have this spiritual gift, which is why I got into ministry of ESP, I know instantly and intuitively what they're doing and why the things have been held up. It's a shameful admission, but there, I admit it. And of course, once I was able to step back from that and look down on it and go, oh yeah, that's an idiot thing to assume about why they're late. And why did you do that? And what does that say about you, really? What are you projecting here? Those reflections are just for me. So, would anyone like to share? Don't be shy. Yeah, okay, be shy. Okay, look.
Talking about people who judge, we wondered whether behind that, a couple of days ago, and I was looking around for trying to find something, and I suddenly heard somebody yell out, oh, will you shut up? And I looked around.
We were discussing how the fact that we all went to college and stuff years ago, do what we all did, and now today children leave school and they don't really have careers in front of them.
What would I resent being hastily judged on? And I just said, well, over the years since I've lived in Australia.
Just, you know, in our group, we just got to starting to talk about how judgment sometimes comes from a good place or a well-intended place because you care about something.
Going along to the successes, struggles, insights part, holding back judgment, I think, like, a lot of the time I...
Well, obviously, the purpose of today's sharing is not to exhaust all of the possible iterations in the room, but to just get you talking and thinking more self-critically about these things, analyzing your own responses, and that sort of mindful discernment is really where we're going with this practice this week. Well, thank you for all you being brave enough to share, and thank you, Rob, for being brave enough to let go of the microphone. One of the first things they tell you in ministry school is, if you do a share thing, you hold the mic. Don't give the mic away. To encourage us in our discernment around our natural judgmentalism and to show you that even the stubbornest judgmental thinking can indeed shift, I want to offer you a little story very quickly from recent history of a seemingly intractable bigotry that simply melted away once people got to know each other's stories. Now, these were not strangers judging each other in Big W or on the street, but sworn enemies with fixed prejudices. Ian Paisley, the head of the Ulster Unionists, and Martin McGuinness, the head of Sinn Féin, the political wing of the IRA, their prejudices toward each other, their judgments, had been cemented into place through decades of bitter civil war. Never had a face-to-face encounter, never exchanged one syllable with each other face-to-face, until the brokering of the Stormont peace process, and they actually had to begin to talk to one another. Then something amazing and nearly miraculous happened.
I've always believed, throughout the course of my political life, that Ian Paisley was a very bitter, very harsh person, and was really only interested in his political opinion holding sway. McGuinness admitted 6 months into the experiment, I'm not offering up what he thought about me. Obviously, he probably had as poor an opinion of me as I had of him. Yet, the men forged a working relationship. To the surprise of UK officials, they came together after their first meeting to ask British government officials to vacate the Northern Ireland Assembly's complex at Stormont. To their own surprise, they also discovered they enjoyed each other's company, though their politics remained far apart. Paisley was unstinting in his commitment to Northern Ireland as part of the United Kingdom, while McGuinness never gave up the dream of a united Ireland. The press began calling them the Chuckle Brothers, borrowing the name of a BBC comedy duo because they cracked so many jokes together. During a visit to the United States in December 2007, the pair charmed George W. Bush and displayed their newfound comedy. Up until March 26 this year, Ian Paisley and I have never had a conversation about anything, not even the weather, McGuinness told Bush. Paisley soft-pedaled their past disputes, which he characterised as nothing more than squabbles, and saying they were now on the same side. There will be a fight for peace, Paisley said. You have to fight for peace, and we are dedicated to that.
Thanks, Meredith. The extraordinary story of these two coming together, of these two old enemies who had been each other's judge, jury, and executioner for decades, has become a major motion picture called The Journey. I recommend you see it. There's no time, you know, it's funny, there is no time in history so remote as the recent past, don't you find? And thus it's easy to forget major moral victories that have happened in our lifetime. Peace in Northern Ireland. In our lifetime, the end of apartheid in South Africa, a reunited Germany, who knows, maybe even Palestine and Israel are not beyond hope. The hopeful lessons learned by this amazing rewiring of the brains of McGuinness and Paisley were not lost either on the progressive Irish, as their recent history of social justice shows. In order to work for change, you have to be metacognitive. You have to step outside and rise above your own thinking. How else did a theocratically primitive, priest-ridden country be one of the first in the world to make same-sex marriage law? How else did the Catholic Irish manage to enshrine into their law recently a woman's inalienable right to choose what to do with her own body? Both these social justice campaigns got people to see a wider and broader view than their own reflexive judgments through sharing actual data, by getting people to tell and hear each other's stories. So you had gay sons telling their grandmas how it was to love someone of the same sex and be denied equal rights before the law. You got young rape victims who had to risk jail and death to terminate their unwanted fetuses, telling their Catholic parents of the fear and the rage and the shame of it. In judgmentalism, we begin with conclusions about people. To break judgmentalism requires greater understanding. To gain understanding, we have to start with actual knowledge about life as it is lived by others before we reach conclusions. That discernment is the mark of the truly free mind. That discernment is the mark of a truly open heart. That discernment is the mark of true spiritual maturity. Now, of course, as leaders, what was at stake for Paisley and McGuinness was peace between nations. But isn't peace what's at stake in each of our own personal lives? Peace of mind and heart? The opportunity to go placidly amid the noise and haste of our days, to laugh more readily, to love more abundantly, to look on our fellow man with beneficence, and in simple enlightened self-interest to give ourselves a heart less rancorous, less apt to condemn, a contented heart, a mind more elastic and in control of itself. That is worth a bit of short-term discomfort, surely. So I want to encourage that discomfort. I want to encourage you to get down to work this month on our shared journey of spiritual practice by noticing and undoing our easy judgments of others. Next week, We will look more deeply into your experiences of judging others, and we will look, and the week after, we're going to look at a case study, an easy judgment our culture encourages us to make, the way we are encouraged to kick down on the poor and the jobless. That final Sunday features guest speaker Paz Forgione from the Anti-Poverty Network. As I mentioned last week, a path that requires a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves is not a comfortable one, but it helps to have fellow travelers on the way. For today, let us bear each other up as one church newly resolved to free our minds to walk the difficult path of discernment, and so free our hearts to the greater love we are called to by all of the wisdom that ever has been. So may it be. Join together in singing our closing hymn, One More Step Along the World I Go. Please stand as you're able. Thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.